The Protect Your Neck Podcast. Top 5 Kick KOs. From side kicks to fly kicks, we reflect on the blows.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night.
What is up, you savages? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com. If you're hearing the busyness and the noise around us, yes, I'm in a different place from the Batcave. I am actually on site by MMA Junkie Radio Studio, actually in their studio with my guest today. That's right, we are in the Mandalay Bay with co-host of MMA Junkie Radio, Goes Garcia.
What up? How you doing, Dan?
Dude, good to be here. Good to hang out with you, my friend. I've been meaning to get you on this thing for a minute.
Feels like home, right? You've done shows here.
Yeah, I was going to say, it almost feels like I'm doing your podcast because I'm sitting essentially in the same spot. I'm actually sitting in Gigi's spot.
Yeah.
But sitting in the same spot, but we're doing actually a different show. And just to get right off the bat, and you know, let's as Harvey Keitel would say in Reservoir Dogs, or maybe that's not the exact quote, but let's get the dick sucking out of the way. And I kind of owe you guys a lot to this. I mean, let's be honest. I've been a martial artist first, and I eventually became a fan, eventually became a competitor, and now I'm working in it. And throughout all those stages, there are very few people that have known me the whole way, and you're one of those people, man.
Well, I remember the first time I met you, and you you left a lasting impression because you came in this big old smile and just this young kid. I was like, all right, this kid's awesome, and you knew all your stuff, so I was like, cool. And just to see you kind of mature throughout the years, and not that you were immature when I first met you, but just all of the roads and paths that you've taken, I'm pretty impressed, man. I'm so happy that you're doing this. It couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
That means a lot coming from you, my man.
You brought us cupcakes.
That's right.
Before Misha did.
Yeah, well, I had to go to across town to get those, too. That was a really awesome place that is no longer in business, but I do remember that, man. That was some good times, and so, yeah, it's good to be here now, and look at that. I mean, I call into my first MMA Junkie radio show giving predictions, and now I have a job doing predictions and breaking down fights. It's kind of how this world works if you stay along long enough, right?
I'm glad that you get to do it, because you're legitimately one of the best ones at it.
Yeah, that's way too kind. Okay, now back to that Harvey Keitel line. Now that's out of the way.
That's why we bring you in, to make us look good.
Well, I appreciate that, man. But
that's why we make you go last.
But the reason why we're kind of talking about history and maybe waxing poetic here, you know, forgive us, by the way. But the whole reason is a point. It's the point of this top five podcast. Whenever there's, you know, not fights to break down pre or post, when we have which seem really rare, crazy
doesn't
enough these days.
Doesn't happen too often.
Yeah, where we actually have a weekend off. I figure this top five segment is good for hardcore fans like ourselves, those listening, to kind of reflect on the past, because right before our eyes, not only do me and you have a history, but this sport has a history that shadows all of us, man. It's really growing right underneath us.
The hardcores, to be honest, they don't know what they want. Because when there's card after card, weekend after weekend, all we're doing is saying, man, I can't wait for there to be a little break so I can go out and do something. And when it happens, what do? Oh, I wish there was kind of a card this weekend. So hardcores don't really know what they want, but
you're
right. I mean, the break is nice. I think you need it. I think you need to be refreshed. I think it's good for the sport because, I mean, we saw at the end of last year, all of the superstars fought, and it left us with this weird lull where now we're getting cards, but I'm not sure we're getting the value that we're used to. Things are starting to pick up a little bit. UFC's going to be in town next week, so maybe a good little break is okay.
You absolutely nailed it, and it's funny because it seems like just yesterday we were introduced to this talk of modern era wing and this era and this era, and we're almost like, wait a minute, let's slow down. As hardcore as it kind of, you know, we know our history pretty well. Let's pump the brakes with that talk. But now we actually are entering in other eras, you know, where now multi-divisional champions, we're going to see that's not, you know, we're going to have to recognize guys like Couture, Penn, and did it in their eras, because as we're seeing, Connor, by the way, I believe completely deserves it, by the way. I'm not saying that before people get crazy. But, you know, Holm, we could have had one with Holm just now, just a couple weekends ago. And I think we're going to see more of this as the weight class and everything changes. So the point is, this episode and these top five episodes in general are just meant so we can unpack and appreciate our history. Because I think it's important to do that every once in a while.
It is. And I'll tell you what, Dan, from what I've heard, I think you're not going to see it anymore. Multi-division champs.
Oh, yeah? Oh, really?
I think it stirred some stuff up, and I think they don't want to go down that route. So I think changes will start to... We'll start to see a few changes here and there.
It's like when you let the bad kid off the leash, you give him a little bit too much leeway, and he acts up, and he ruins it for the whole class,
right?
It's
the Conor McGregor effect.
That's right.
Everybody sees what that guy goes through, what he's done. They all want it, too. And the problem is, there's not room for that. There's not a... If you look at the NBA, there's a lot of good players, but how many stars? Like, what are the names that... You run into anyone on the street and you say LeBron James, they may not tell you what his number is, what team he plays for, but they know who he is. There's only a few of those in MMA that can demand that kind of respect where you could say Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture. People will go, well, I can't tell you who he fought, but I know who that name is. Right now, it's probably like the Ronda Rouseys of the world, the Conor McGregors. They can do that, but that doesn't mean that a Jacare Souza can do it. It doesn't mean that a Tyron Woodley can do it. They're not at that point yet, and I think all the shakeup that Connor's done has made those fighters want to be there, and they can't. And WME, they're not going to be able to put up with all that. So I would say you're probably not going to see too much of that. The whip is going to get cracked, is what I mean.
Real spot on there. And while we're on this topic, and before we jump in, by the way, we're doing our top five kick KOs today. But before we jump into those, while we're on this topic, Goz actually made me watch this film, speaking of reflecting on fighters' career paths and kind of seeing what happens to the 99% that isn't named McGregor, so to speak. And he had me watch, I believe it's called The Hurt Business. And I watched it actually last night, so I don't know why I have to say I believe it's called. Yeah, I just watched it last night. Well, I really enjoyed this, man. As a film, you might not know this, Goz, so much. Well, you kind of know this. I've talked to you, but maybe the audience, I should say, doesn't. But I'm a real film nut, so I'm kind of hardcore on certain things. And even though there's things that, of course, I could pick out like anybody else, I was kind of just glad, first of all, my first feel, that MMA were to the point and growing. We're actually getting the kind of attention where real cinematography and real storytelling is starting to enter our space.
Well, Kevin Costner's narrating the damn thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Did that make you feel old? He sounded like an old man.
I felt so old.
This isn't the postman that I grew up with.
Really?
Well, it was deep pool there.
The fact that just going through and the reason, you're kind of the reason I even brought it up, was because I started thinking about your journey in mixed martial arts and just covering the sport. And it started making me think, because I started thinking, well, I've known Dan a pretty long time, but that means that I've been doing it even longer. And then I started thinking about just how long that journey's been and all the different stages. And I remembered the movie, and the movie just covers a lot of that. But I think what we've seen in other movies in the past or documentaries is it kind of makes you, it kind of made the sport look bad a little bit. But this one just showed you the other side of fighters and what they go through and the highs and the lows. And I just thought it was a great movie. One of my close and personal friends, Mike the Joker Guyman,
yes,
he had a big role in that movie. And he was the second guest ever on MMA Junkie Radio.
Yeah,
he
absolutely
came
yes
to the house. The day after we did our first show, we all went out and celebrated. I had a huge party at this club. I don't even remember what it was called. But it got so rough that I remember... we had, so you know when they bring you bottle service and they bring you a big bucket with ice and they put like the vodka and the cranberry and all that stuff in there? Frank Trigg was there because he was our co-host at the time. And I go, hey, Trigg, watch this. And I grabbed the cranberry and the big giant bottle of Grey Goose and poured it into the giant bucket that they serve it in. And then we built a giant straw and we all drank from that one bucket that whole night. And so... Needless to say, we all got smashed.
Oh, yeah.
And Trigg was staying with us at the time. So the next morning, he had mentioned, because we go, whoa, we're so hammered celebrating our first show, that we didn't even book a guest for the next day. So he goes, oh, I'll take care of it or whatever. But he never really told us what he did. And so anyway, in the morning I wake up and there's just shit everywhere, man, like beer bottles. It looked like a frat house. And the doorbell rings. I open the door and it's Mike Guyman. I didn't know Mike. I didn't even know. I knew him. I actually hated him. Because I would see him around with all the tap-out guys. So the way people always say, we remember the tap-out guys when they would sell T-shirts out of their trunk. Like, we witnessed that, okay? And we would do the same thing. We would pass out CDs of our show and tell people, hey, you came all the way out here to Pechanga to watch the fights. Or not Pechanga, sorry, Saboba. Why don't you listen to our greatest hits on the way home, right? So we would do the same shit. And anyway, what I noticed was this is the guy that I would always see everywhere. And all the people that I'm friends with are friends with this guy, but I don't know who he is, and he's always got this dumb smile on his
right,
face,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that haircut, and I don't know why he just bugged me, and lo and behold, I wake up in the morning, and the first guy I see is my proclaimed arch nemesis that I don't even know who he is, and he's just standing there with this big, dumb grin on his face, and I'm like, what is going on right now? He goes, my name is Mike Guyman, and he comes in, and he goes, this trick here, and I go, okay, I'm figuring it out, this is our guest. So I go, yeah, he's in the back, I take him, and knock on the door, and he grabs his trash can and a coat hanger, and Trig's still asleep, and he bangs this metal trash can with a coat hanger. It makes this obnoxiously loud noise. Trig jumps out of the bed. Of course, he sleeps naked, even when he's sleeping at his buddy's house. So now you got a naked dude running around going, what the fuck is going on? Joker's laughing his ass off. And that when he did that, I was like, oh, okay, I like this guy. He's cool. And that was the first time I had ever met him. And so going back now, this is the second guest ever on our show, and I'm watching some of the stuff from this movie. And if you watch the movie, we're actually a part of the movie. We have our junkie gathering here in Las Vegas, and they show him driving to an MMA trivia night to hang out with us. The cool thing about Joker is Joker didn't get paid to do that. Joker did that just because he wanted to be part of it. He loves us. He loves our listeners. And he drove all the way to Vegas just to hang out with us. So to let you know what type of a person that guy is, and when you watch that movie, just watch that and just know that a guy is driving all those miles just to make people happy.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, I've listened to you guys since you were Tag Radio and then, of course, from the start of Junkie. So I've become familiar with Joker Guyman through your show. Now, you know, as a fan, what I maybe have, you know, I'll come across him anyways through Stint in the UFC, sure, but we got to see a side of him through your guys' show that we didn't really get to see. So even though that was really powerful and well done how they did it, just the fact when Joker hits the screen, which, by the way, I think he has one of the coolest kind of intros, which I appreciate how they edit and put the name on, you know, Joker on there. And he had one of the coolest character intros, by the way. But just to kind of know that story and where they're going with it kind of gave me some goosebumps. And then on that drive to California, I mean, I didn't know that you guys were in it. You didn't tell me anything. You just told me to watch this.
Well, I didn't know I was in it until I watched it.
But I was watching that, and I kind of, in my head, and I wasn't actually at that event. I mean, I sadly, even though despite living here, I don't make it to the Junkie events as much as I should. But I was aware of that event, and that was in the back of my head. I go, I bet you he's driving out for a Junkie event right now. Because, you know, in it, you're like, why is this guy driving out there? And, you know, not elaborating too deep or whatever, but, I mean, like, I said that Joker and Goodridge, you know, hit me the hardest. You know, one, Joker through your show, but also, you know, as somebody who, you know, I don't talk about it much. And, you know, there was a spot, you know, where I was medicated for it when I was younger. Didn't know any better, just kind of listening to doctors. But I've dealt with, you know, the biological sides of depression and kind of have a sympathy for it that a lot of people, you know, don't. And thankfully, I don't think I've been in a bad place, but like a lot of anecdotals you hear. But that being said, I can absolutely relate to, you know, another man struggling with that, much less another martial artist. And as you know, which we've talked about on your show, Junkie, you know, part of the reason why I'm doing this and not competing anymore is because I have dealt with concussions, despite not being, you know, having a pro record or even making it that far, but doing 20 years of martial arts, so on and so forth, and just accruing kind of damage and how that kind of affected me. And to see Goodridge, who, you know, I knew Goodridge was struggling with it. We all know that he was kind of stuttery of speech, but there was really a lot of eloquent excerpts from all the fighters there. But Goodridge was ironically the most eloquent of them all. I forget one part that he was saying, but it was talking about kind of chasing it, how it's like, oh, I got to get it just one more, just another chance. Mm-hmm. And he articulated it so it sounds so simplistic, like, you know, a hyperactive four-year-old is explaining a point. And I'm not saying that as to be mean to Gary Goodridge, but as far as face value. But if you really just think about what he's saying and the spirit, and the good-hearted spirit, and the honestness that he's talking, it really hit home with me. So I was really, really happy you had me had me watch that, man. That was a really cool watch. So
I think anybody that's trying to get into the sport should definitely look into that movie and just see what could be the possibilities of this career choice. I remember Gary Goodridge, when we would interview him early on, this was probably like the second year that we were doing our show, because I was already in Las Vegas. He's the only fighter that ever told me, I asked him if he would do the show, and he said yeah. And then he called me back like 10 minutes later, almost like he thought about it. And he goes, hey, if I say this, this is a code for blank. And he gave me like 3 or 4 of those. And I just thought it was so weird because we had never dealt with anybody that ever said anything like that. And now looking back, I'm wondering if maybe he was already feeling those types of things. And maybe he made it sound like maybe it was a question that he wouldn't want to answer. But there really weren't very many questions that we would ask him that he wouldn't have to answer.
Yeah.
So I think it's just maybe it's just like a memory thing where he realizes I don't remember what he just asked me or what. And there's just a cue that can get him out of the situation. But looking back now, I'm thinking, wow, I mean, all this could have been going on way before we even knew.
Yeah, it's scary, especially, you know, I mean, the science is just so new that we're seeing it unfold and the sample sizes unfold before us. So I think it's really important, you know, people brought up, I think Proteus, and Proteus is a great guy. Shout out to Proteus, by the way. But when I tweeted the topic we're doing today, you know, top 5 kick KOs, and he goes, ironic you would do that after Edom. And I was kind of catching up on that story, by the way. So I'm not, I don't know all about it. But that truly breaks my heart, stuff like that. And that's definitely not the reason why. And that's not in my list, regardless of the recent Terry Edom news. Is that Barbosa Edom KO, by the way, spoiler, wouldn't be my list anyways for other reasons, not just because of that. So in no way am I picking this comp topic or avoiding it because of these reasons, but it does highlight, you know, kind of what Proteus was saying. I'm like, yeah, man, it's crazy to see how people change. And from that documentary, I don't want to, you know, give an idea out there, but it's kind of ripping an idea that Chuck Mendenhall already did by the night we met Jose Aldo, where he interviews all the opponents of Jose Aldo the night he faced him. It almost felt like a small part of that with the John Jones when he was talking about Brandon Vera, although indirectly, you know, changing his career. And you're like, wow, that did change his career. Bone. Yeah, and then Rashad Evans, how that changes. And you can almost, like, retract to everybody Jones faced, Shogun, and notable points, Rampage, you know, and notable points where the competitiveness, where there was a drop-off afterwards. There was a notable change. And that's kind of a whole another sidetrack in itself. But yeah, back to what Proteus said and kind of winding our way back to the topic here. You know, believe me, this is definitely a place where we respect the past and definitely respect things like that. So if you are a fan of that stuff and kind of seeing the other side of the sport and the more real side, but, you know, still, I believe fair. I believe they did a fair job. Mm-hmm. Go check out The Hurt Business. I think it's on Netflix right now streaming.
It's on Netflix, yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, on that note, we are going to enter our top 5 KO kicks. Now, we've done top 5 fuse, which was fun with Jordan Killing. We did top 5 BJ Penn moments. Now we're doing top 5 KO kicks. Now, KO is kind of a broad subject, so we tried to narrow it down to kicks here. You know, there's going to be some things where, you know, what if, you know, the kick follows the punches, or, well, does punches following a kick just, you know, disqualify it? We'll get into all of that. Essentially, the kick has to be the spirit of it, no matter where it lands. It has
the
to
meat
be
and potatoes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has to, the kick, you have to be able to point to a kicking technique on why that fight ended. No matter how that fight ended, as long as a kicking technique is a key correlation, you know, we're not sticklers on the rules. In fact, as you will know, if you haven't picked up already, kind of like myself, a little bit of an adverse hipster list, and I think goes. Why don't you give us a little sneak peek of your list? I believe you went with not typical choices too, right?
I think some of them are blatantly something you would think I would put on a list or somebody would put on a list.
Good, okay.
But I think there's maybe 3 of them that I don't think most people would get, and I kind of picked my list more along the lines of I can always remember where I was when I saw certain things go down. And there's certain kicks, we'll give the Edson Barbosa Terry Edom kick. I remember the kick. I remember how crazy it was, but I didn't remember where I was. I don't know if it had that effect on me the way some of these other ones have. So that's why I picked some of these other ones.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I agree, and that's why I had a goes on here, and that's why I kind of try to be selective with the top 5 episodes, because it's something where you have to go, you know, way back. And even myself, who I feel old and stuff at times, I'll look at, you know, not old, but old as a fan. I'll look at people like Goes and George, and they can recite stuff from, you know, the first 20 UFCs like it was just happened yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's why I was really, you know, I'll definitely have George on, and you guys will probably be on again, definitely, obviously. But that's why, you know, guests like yourself are very invaluable. So thanks for coming on, man. This is going to be
no problem.
Fun. Why don't you kick us off then? We're going to start with number 5. We're going to go 5-1. Huh?
Did you do that on purpose?
Oh, I can start off if you want, but yeah.
No, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, okay. Oh, there we go. That's see, puns. This is going to be a pun-filled savvy. Episode. This is going to be a pun-filled episode.
I'm going to go with Tim Sylvia over Trey Teligman. I'm going to tell you why I picked this one. I'm going to play it. You guys can't see it, but in the background over here, I'm showing Dan Tom. So Tim Sylvia sets up this big kick with his left foot. Hits Trey Teligman, but the reason I picked this one was Tim just wasn't known for being that type of fighter. You know, all the damage he would do was with his hands. You would never expect him to even throw that. And if you watch the video, see, Trey Teligman has, like, this is what stood out to me, was instantly he had about 7 or 8 people surrounding him at the time, okay? It almost looked like if somebody were to, man, I don't even want to say this because I'm in the Secret Service, but you know what I'm saying, how they just all huddle around a certain individual that leads the country. And it just seems so bad. This is early on in a sport where people are still calling a sport barbaric, and you have a guy that's laying on his back right now who's missing half of his chest. So you know all the noobs and all the people against the sport are going to go, why is this guy even allowed to compete? You know, he's missing half of his chest. What kind of sport is this? And the guy's out. And he doesn't move for about 2 or 3 minutes. He's surrounded by people. It was such a scary moment. And I remember exactly where I was when I saw that. And that's why I picked that fight.
That is so great. And of all the key points, which I'll touch on a couple that you mentioned, which were all great, the main thing Ghost said, which I love, is that you have to keep in mind that this was an age where not only was death a possibility in people's minds, mm-hmm. but it was a solid demographic for the pay-per-view buy that was keeping the sport alive. Let's be honest, there was still a lot of remnants of that marketing. So when stuff like this happened, first of all, it had that extra effect, which is really, it's easy to say, but it's really hard to kind of grasp. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And this came after I became kind of a hardcore. I was kind of always aware of it, you know, from doing martial arts. I did Taekwondo, you know, 93 to 96 in regional national scene. And then, you know, did Kenpo Karate from about 99 to 2003. So I was always aware of these things. And I was always buying the Black Belt magazines. But it was kind of that our martial art is better. So I always would have those teachers. I'd be like, don't worry, Dan. This is all you need to know. We'll teach you some shitty judo and some shitty triangle chokes with the gi. You'll be fine. You don't need to go to a jiu-jitsu class. And unfortunately, too, so that kind of stalled me kind of getting over to that. So it kind of stalled me following the sport, even though I was always aware of it. So I kind of was more of a hardcore by the time Randy Couture came back to fight Tim Sylvia. But I didn't get what the big deal with the Tim Sylvia guy was. And I had a buddy, Bronson, who was like, you know, balls deep in the sport. It wasn't even a martial artist. He was a skateboarder. I mean, these were like the friends that kind of drew me back into the sport. I was into my punk rock days. I kind of got burnt out from the, you know, commercial karate and kind of thought everything was fake. And these guys kind of brought me back into the round, brought me back into martial arts by the UFC. And I was like, but I don't get this. This is the baddest man in the world is supposed to be, right? Because I came from the boxing.
It's always the heavyweight champion.
I grew up with boxing. I was like, this is Tim Sylvia, the pigeon toe guy who looks like he could, you know, I'm sorry, I grew up in the 90s, fight for the retard league? Like, how is this guy gonna do any damage? And he's like, no, hold on. And he pulls up that knockout. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Oh, yeah, Dan. You were the biggest, you know, proprietor of don't judge a book by its cover, and you violated that. And Tim Sylvia reminded me that you can judge a book by its cover even when they're a big monster like he is.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so I'm glad you put that one. That's a solid number 5 choice. My number 5. Okay, honorable mentions aren't coming till after submissions in transition, but this honorable mention I'm going to mention now because it has to do with my number 5.
Okay.
Because my number 5 was originally, okay, one of my favorite cards, which will make another, one of my favorite cards headlined by BJ Penn, which it's replaced by another card that's headlined by BJ Penn, UFC 80, because not because it was headlined by BJ Penn, but that was a fun card. Like, it was nonstop stoppages. You had, you know, Marcus Davis, Liadon, Verdum, Gonzaga. Like, there was a bunch of stoppages, but so many times when we go kick KO, we immediately go to head kick, but not enough, you know, attention is paid to the leg kick, you know, unless you're Joe Rogan, who loves it. And the reason why I say that is because Joe Rogan plays a part why I originally picked Anthony Hardong versus Colin Robinson at UFC 80, because it looked like the first time we're not just, you know, we've seen guys get stopped by leg kicks, and maybe not in the UFC at that point, but we've seen it if you follow any other combat sports like Muay Thai, right? But this is one where the guy got hit by 2 solid leg kicks by Hardonk. Colin Robinson got hit by those leg kicks by Hardonk. And you saw him almost get wobbly and unconscious, and he was kind of out of his sorts, and the referee stopped the fight. And it looked like an early stoppage. And you go back, you're like, no, he was out of his sorts, and he tries to get back up, and his leg collapses. So you're like, oh, it was a leg kick. And I was like, that's a leg kick. That's going to be on my list because it's the leg kick KO. It's a crazy one. But when you watch back, there's actually a small check jab that Hardonk throws that actually clips him, and he goes down. And Rogan misses it live. And I'm picking on Rogan. I love Rogan, but Rogan gets hard when it comes to leg kicks. Like, if a guy is throwing leg kicks, doesn't matter what's going on. Like, he's the lotion, the Curel's on the announce table next to the mic. Rogan's ready to go. Like, I love Rogan, but he loves leg kicks. He loves him some leg kicks, and he's going off on it. And then you get to the post fight interview. So now the replay is being played for a third time, and Hardonk kind of interrupts him and goes, "It's actually a check left, but yeah, the leg kicks were definitely part of the plan, but it was a check left." And then, you know, it goes back to the bounce, and then Rogan actually gives the mic to Hardonk, and Hardonk reiterates that it was the left hand, and Rogan goes, "Yeah, but that leg kick." And Rogan completely dismisses. He doesn't, you can go back and rewatch it. He doesn't give it one credit. Like, Hardonk, there's four replays, and there's two, like, Hardonk speaks good English for, you know, a lot of Dutch people speak good English. So it wasn't like he misunderstood him. Like, Hardonk clearly states, like, "No, actually, if you look at the replays, Joe, you'll see that I hit a check left in the exit." He's like, really technically particular how he tells it. And Rogan's like, "Yeah, but that leg kick." And he can't get off from it. So when I found out and I was crushed, I'm like, okay, it wasn't a leg kick. I went to the next one. And this is a shout out to Pound for Pound podcast host, not Sam Alvey, but my man, Jordan Killian. He always mentions this because he was in attendance. This was another, I believe, BJ Penn card, UFC 123, where he fought Matt Hughes.
Okay.
And this was Edson Barboza versus Michael Lulo. And he was in the audience. And watching it just makes me cringe hearing those leg kicks land. And, you know, Jordan was there, and he said even as a spectator in the audience, it was cringeworthy to where I believe it was a second or third round back in 2010. Edson Barboza got a stoppage via leg kicks. I believe that was his second, or no, it was actually his first. He got two that via that route in his UFC career.
Mm-hmm.
But that one almost sticks in my head. So for that reason, to represent the leg kicks, I chose Edson Barboza, Mike Lulo, my number five.
I like that one. You know, that people don't realize how bad those leg kicks are, what they can do to people. I remember, I want to say it was Pride. It was one of the early Prides. And it was Vitor Belfort was just coming over from the UFC, and he fought Sakuraba. And Sakuraba was kicking the shit out of his legs. And it was so bad that he fought, most of his fight was off his back, like Murilo Bustamante and Tom Erickson. He had to fight off his back because he couldn't stand anymore. And for us people who watch the fight ends when the fight ends, when the referee stops at the corner, throws in the towel. But the next day, you would get these images. I mean, it's still early on, so, like, the internet's barely a thing, right? There's barely any news of this, but somehow somebody posted pictures of Vitor in the wheelchair, and they're wheeling him out of the hotel because he can't stand. He took so many leg kicks. And people don't realize that one of the biggest fears when you get these leg kicks are the possibility of getting these clots in your legs from the blood, and they can't get on their plane. They can't get on a plane and go home because you don't want to be on a plane with a possible blood clot. So it takes time for them to heal, to even be able to be normal again and get back to normal day life. You would imagine the guy that got head kicked or one punch KO'd, that's the guy you got to watch the next day. A lot of times it's the dude that took the punishment to the legs.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a strong point that I want to touch on even more. But I think between the both of us, we may have even more points to elaborate on that point. So we'll go ahead and push on. Would you mind leading off on number four as well, and I'll lead off on the back half?
And number four, now this is where I kind of break the rules a little bit.
All right, go for it, my man.
I was a big fan of Pride.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good.
And the Pride rule set. All right. This is Icon, okay? And this is Frank Trigg versus Mayhem Miller. This fight actually ends with Frank Trigg giving Mayhem soccer kicks in the corner. And these kicks, man, if you got the right feed and you're hearing this audio, it's just this thud of these knees. He starts off with the knees, he gets them down, and it's just one after another. And, you know, Frank Trigg was our co-host for many years, and he would talk about not only landing those kicks, but the pain that was in the foot from throwing them. It was just really brutal, and you don't see this very much anymore because this rule set's kind of gone away, unless you're a one championship fan. But and there's a Gorgeous George that comes in there at the end and lifts him up. He was in his corner that night. That night, like I said, this is a very long time ago. So this is back on MySpace where there was
goodness,
a girl.
The abandoned playground.
We had a girl that was in the arena, and she would forward me news of what's going on in the fight. And then I had like 200 people in a MySpace. It might have been my blog or something, and they're just going, "What's happening now?" And I'm just feeding them text, you know, "Round one's over, Trigg did this," or "Trigg's landing a left or right." And that's the way we went. That's why I remember exactly where I was. And so I'm telling them, Trick finished the fight via soccer kicks. And people were like, what? Are you crazy? This is a lie, a troll job. And even I kind of felt like, wow, does this girl dupe me or what? And I'm trying to text George, but he's in the corner, so he's not getting back to me. And later on that night, George says, no, that's the way it went down. So
shit.
I'm trying to envision it in my head, how it could have possibly got to that scenario. And finally, I saw the video of it, and I was like, holy shit, man. Like, I mean, a soccer kick is a human being taking pretty much all the force they can, cocking that leg back and firing away on one of the hardest parts of the body, right? Usually the top of the head's getting hit because the guy's covering up, but he was hitting mayhem with hell. So that's why I went with that one as my number four.
Holy shit, man. I'm so glad you brought this one up, too. I wanted to pay homage to a similar kind of finish as well, which we'll get to later. Not this, though. And despite being Hawaiian, I did not see this Icon show live. I actually went to see this kind of harkening back to... this might even be before Junkie Radio. This might be Tag Radio when you guys had those Trigonomics commercials running. Yeah. And I just thought the commercial always kind of caught my ear, right? And I was like, who? And I honestly didn't know Frank Trigg was until your guys' show.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, okay. So that I did my due diligence. I went on the old Google or YouTube or whatever it was then, right? Yeah. And I remember... It might not have been the first one. Maybe the first one. I might have probably went the obvious choices. I probably watched like Trigg versus St. Pierre and the UFC stuff. But I made it to this one versus Jason Mayhem Miller that you said. And right at, this was just, it really impacted me, first of all. But right after this, I made the mistake. Like, it's like seeing two like high intensity thrillers in a row and you do too much to your heart. Well, the fight I watched after this was Trigg versus Lawler.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so, like, I literally, watching those two back-to-back, those two brutal finishes, I literally had to sit back in my computer chair, like, stop, you know, as hard as it is to stop the old YouTube downward spiral that we get into, I stopped it very easily, because I remember just feeling, like, almost sick, like, not to my stomach, but, like, just, like, I need to slow down for a second, like, wow, that was too brutal, like, I just watched in succession. And I was aware of Pride, so it wasn't like it was anything I didn't see at the time, you know. But it was just one of those things where, like, that was a brutal effing fight. And you're right about those soccer kicks, man. I mean, I remember I was a little kid at the time, so it was kind of silly. But I remember one of the little kid fights that got me into martial arts. I remember getting into a fight at a local park by my neighborhood, and it was a kid that was way bigger. He felt like an adult. I don't know how old he was. Probably was in junior high, maybe even high school. But I was, like, in grade school, and I remember he punched me or something, hit me, and I went down. And as a little kid, but I remember after I went down, he kept kicking me while I was on the ground. And I just remember his Vans shoes kind of slamming into my ribs. Thankfully, he was kicking my body and not my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember that feeling, like, this is the most, like, you know, like, I would rather be up on the feet taking punches to the head. Like,
you're not seeing the kicks. That's the worst part.
And it's just as far as degrading goes, I mean, if getting beat up in general is not degrading enough to your ego, no matter what age of a man or boy you are. But just that, I just felt so vulnerable. So maybe it's a little bit of that, you know, you get scared of the boogeyman, so you jump when you see a tiger in the jungle kind of effect. It's implanted in our genetics to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, those soccer kicks really harken home.
That fight that you're talking about, the Robbie Lawler fight.
Yeah.
Our very first show ever was right after that. So our show, I don't remember what time we started, maybe like 9 a.m. or something. And we had to pick Trigg up at the airport because he was coming in from Hawaii. And so when we're in the car, we're driving over there, and me and George are kind of... It was only a one-hour show back then, and we were going through what we thought we could talk about in the first show. And we're like, well, isn't this going to be really easy? We're picking up Frank Trigg. Talk about his fight, right?
Right.
All right, cool. That'll be the whole first show. So pick up Trigg, comes in, and first thing he says is, so what are we talking about today? Who's our guest? We don't have a guest first show. You're kind of the guest. We'll introduce you and what we're all about, and then we'll talk about the fight. And he goes, nah, it's not going to work. And we're like, what do you mean? This, you know, we're starting to get nervous now, because now that means we got to be hosts, which we're not trained in. And he goes, yeah, we can't do that. I go, why not? And he goes, I don't remember the fight. And I remember when he said that, I got cold for two reasons. One, I realized just how dangerous this game is. Right?
Yeah.
Here's a guy that does not remember a fight that he just took part in. And two, because now we don't got anything to talk about on the show.
Uh-huh.
And it's our very first show. And that led to us, for those of you who heard the first show, we go back and we start drinking tequila and Coronas. And we had to get some kind of buzz because we were so nervous about doing our first show. And and then having that. And at the same time, it's not like we could go, now we can talk about it, but at the time we didn't want to go, yeah, we have nothing to talk about because Trigg doesn't remember his fight. So that fight in particular did hit home a lot. And I know exactly what you mean about that just cringeworthy feeling. And stop me if I'm talking too much, by the way.
No, not at all, not at all. That's
the good. Other thing that I didn't like about that fight was the last hit that he gave him was a very late hit. And
he
was questioned about that, Robbie Lawler, afterwards, and he said he did it because Trigg would have done it to him. And so he's looking at Trigg as the guy that rivaled with one of his good friends, Matt Hughes, and you know, it was a nut shot or two in that fight. And
yeah,
and so I remember thinking, man, you can't play around like that. You know, I get what you that you don't like the guy, but you can't do that, because as you can tell now, that one punch has changed Trigg's life. You know, like, a lot of things didn't go his way after that. And to have someone almost brag about the fact that they did that, I didn't like that. And for the longest time on our show, when we would interview Robbie Lawler, I would turn my chair in protest, and I would never ask a question. You can go back and listen. I wouldn't ask Robbie a question because I didn't want to talk to the guy. And I think one time here at the Mandalay Bay, I was with some junkie, Sam Alljam, and he wanted a picture with Robbie Lawler, and he asked me to take it. I wouldn't take it. And I left him, and a poor guy, in an awkward situation because he's there with Robbie and no one to take the picture. But years later, this is probably going on maybe 4 years ago, we went to Zuffa offices to do some interviews with Jake Ellenberger, Robbie Lawler, a couple other people. And we just asked him. And we just go, hey, man, what the hell happened here? Like, why did you do that? And Robbie gave us one of the most sincere answers. And I can talk to him now because basically he just said, look, man, he goes, if I could go back, I wouldn't have done it. I was just young. I was young and dumb. And he kissed me at the weigh-ins and it pissed me off. So he goes, I did that. And he goes, I know it's wrong, but I can't go back and change the past. And I took it as a sincere apology. And now I interview Robbie Lawler all the time. But yeah, that is one fight where if we did a list of 5 fights that maybe changed your life, that would be on my list.
That's crazy, man. So many things are kind of flashing back to me as you're saying that, and it definitely clicks and makes sense now that I think back. But even me, I didn't even know that story. So that, yeah, man, thank you for sharing that, definitely. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely those moments. And again, that's kind of why I like, you know, having someone like yourself on this too, because even though we come from two different aspects of it, you know, me more from the martial arts, competitor, fan, and you, we share the, obviously, the fan part, but you've been working in this game for over a decade now, which is crazy to say, I'm sure. I'm sure you probably don't appreciate me putting in those words, but it's out of respect. And you know, there's the casualties of war, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna eventually be in some back rooms, whether you're cornering someone like your brother or just getting close to the fighters like you or I have throughout the years. You can't help it. I mean, you know, there's supposed to be this bias that we have because, you know, we're technically associated with media companies, both of us.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about you guys. You guys have never... And I think that's why you guys have the same fans. And
you got to be
fans
human,
grow,
right?
Yeah, you're human and real. And I think people appreciate that. And you go, hey, you know, when they're wrong, they admit they're wrong. When they're biased, they admit they're biased. But at the end of the day, whether you agree with them or not, they're real. And I think there's value to that. And so it's good that you voice those kind of stories, or I voice my kind of stories, because again, it's a peek behind the curtain, and it is a bit personal. And sure, it's a lot easier now. You know, after the Icon fight was a while ago, but it's good to revisit these things. Now, before we go to break, I'm going to give you my number four. My number four, okay. I broke the rules too. I broke the rules because there's two. This is a two-way tie for my number four, but this is why. The two-way tie is from the same person, from the same event, and there's the caveat that we said, you know, this is one of those ones where there's a story attached, okay?
Yeah.
Now, I used to work graveyard for the win. I don't know if you know this, but I used to do security, and we would do, you know, graveyard security. And I would help out XS Nightclub and have some really fun street fight stories, which maybe I'll share sometime. Remind me next time I'm on your show, actually.
Yeah.
I'll save it for then. Some real fun street fight stories. But on the quieter nights, I would do Tower Patrol. And when I was either Tower or working what we call the Sky Casino. The Sky Casino, by the way, it's a secret casino. One of the only real secret casinos on the Strip, where the minimum buy-in is $55,000 per hand.
What?
And you have to be pre-approved. This is where, like... Jay-Z gambled here just a couple times, was one of the more notable names, and ran down very angry to the regular high limit slots because he couldn't hang. This is where, like, those quiet Chinese whales that you hear about in movies.
Holy shit.
This is where they come to play and, like, play their inheritance away. We've seen it. Like, you know, they only take, like, you know, the only certain security guards. I had to be called up there for a security guard once because they couldn't have a female security guard. That was considered bad luck for the gambler. So I got called up. Up there, and this was a really, like, private, you know, there
very
was
very, like, superstitious gambling.
Yeah, and it
that's
was
why,
like,
the MGM, you know, it had a facelift.
Yes,
you remember when it used to have the big lion in the
oh,
front?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no,
do you know why they removed
that.
It?
Yep. Chinese,
it's
they're
bad
catering.
Luck to go underneath an animal.
And the Asian market is a huge market. We're not very vocal minority, but mm-hmm. and we don't get a lot of credit in Hollywood, but when it comes to money, they respect that Asian minority.
Oh, yeah.
It's real quiet, guys, but it's real here in Vegas, and and yeah, so, you know, the great thing was that barely anybody with the limits that I was telling you played for those limits. So literally 350 days out of the year, or 330 days, some weird statistic, like, it was empty, this guy casino. And it was a two-story suite. It had, like, so you could have your, you know, hookers and coke parties and whatever you wanted to do, and have the gambling hall all in the same spot with the pool, with the indoor jacuzzi and all that crazy crap, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was this crazy thing we had all to ourselves as the security guards, and it had, like, direct TV and all this late night stuff. So I worked graveyard. I worked midnight to 8 a.m. So this was perfect for, unfortunately, this
hookers and oh
well,
okay,
no.
Oh,
okay. Well, unfortunately, this wasn't during the Pride era, but Dream was in full effect.
Ah.
Okay? So I would go and watch Japanese MMA at night and sneak away whenever I was at a post in the tower or at the Sky Casino itself. I'd be kicking my feet up and watching, you know, if someone wants to watch something else, I'm like, sorry, guys, you got to go use one of the other TVs, which thankfully there were many. I'm like, MMA's on this TV, and everybody knew that. That was my gig.
Mm-hmm.
And this was Dream 10. And Marius Zaramskis was a name that
Ooh.
I was not familiar with. I was familiar with Hayato
no
Sakurai.
Way.
I was familiar with Jason High, as I love that drop you do, by the way. That's right. I was not familiar with the Lithuanian Marius Zaramskis, who iced with two head kick KOs. First, Hayato Sakurai, and then Jason High to win the Dream 10 tourney there.
Mm-hmm.
And is in that epic run that got him the fight. That actually got him the fight. His next fight was in Strikeforce to Nick Diaz, where he would enter the scene. Not do too well, but Zaramskis made his name that night. And just, that was a special night where nothing was going on much in my life. I pretty much lost a little bit of friends that I had and a little social life I had with this crazy graveyard security job. Wasn't sure what I was doing. Was just doing morning classes at Extreme Couture. Wasn't even competing or fighting or anything at this time. And, yeah, these little moments like that were the brightest moments of just watching MMA and kind of escaping from the quote-unquote real life I was facing. So, Marius Zaramskis makes my number four.
That's a great one. I miss staying up late for those type of cards.
Yeah.
It's funny you should bring Pride up, because Pride, today's the anniversary of Pride 33, which
Woo!
Is a lot of people consider the greatest card of all time.
Oh, yes. It's up there in my top
now,
top.
Now I think
list.
It's battling with UFC 199, but...
Nine fights on that card only. Nine fights
insane,
on that card, Pride 33.
Only one fight went to a decision. Frank Trigg, to bring him up, against Misaki.
He commentated that night, so a little...
He commentated, yeah.
Little credit
so
to
he Frank. didn't get to... No, he did, yeah. So what happened was, they told him you could commentate that same night, and he had to come out. He had to be the second fight of the night. You would imagine he'd be the first one.
Right.
But because the first one isn't involved in the parade of fighters, they wanted him to be a part of that. So they told him, you have to at least be the second fight of the night. So he came out and did the second. And there's a lot of money back then in sponsors, and he had his Trigonomics brand. So coming
yeah.
out wearing a Trigonomics sweatshirt's a big deal. And he did that, and that place erupted during the... That's one of the... If you never saw the Parade of Fighters in Pride, you're missing out. You got to go back and see that. And a funny story to that was, he asked me for a Goes Jitsu shirt. This is the very first Goes Jitsu shirt.
Whoa.
And this was the week of. We were all hanging out. He had this big suite at Caesar's Palace. And I go, sure, what do you need it for? I'm like, cool, he's going to wear it around the casino. You know, let's get some good pictures. He goes, I'm going to cut weight. I need to sweat. I'm like, he wants to take one of my shirts so he could sweat into it? So I'm a little pissed, but I'm like, here. I give it to him, you know? And we're watching the Parade of Fighters. He comes out, Trigonomics. And then, again, his fight starts. He comes down the ramp. He's wearing his Trigonomics hoodie. And then he takes it off, and underneath he had the Goes Jitsu shirt. He didn't tell me he was going to do that.
Wow.
And so he had the Goes Jitsu shirt, and you could see in the back it said Black Belt and Bullshit. And the whole arena erupted in laughter. And so if you go back and watch the DVD, you could still see that moment.
Got your mark on that
was, like,
event.
One of the coolest things, because, you know, Frank Trigg, a lot of people go, oh, that guy's a dick. yeah, he could be a dick from time to time, but every once in a while he'll do something like that where you go, man, this guy's just a softie at heart. Yeah. That was one of the coolest memories I have of anybody ever doing something nice for me.
That is badass, man. Pride 33 is one of the best cards still in my book. And, yeah, no, I remember that now that you mentioned that. I remember that story. Oh. And that is just so cool that you get to, you know, shout out to my buddy Joe, who is at that card, by the way. Joe Suzuki, going to see you in Costa Rica soon, buddy. But that was... That I'm glad you brought that up, because that was a pop, and you have your own place amongst that card in your own weird little way.
Yeah.
And yeah, man. But I'm with you on the trick bias, because again, you know, despite through getting to know him through your show, I also got to know him on a different, more martial arts level through, you know, my work with Neil Melanson. He was one of the only black belts under Neil.
Mm-hmm.
I was roommate with the other one, Patrick Began, and the third was of course Randy Couture. So that was a kind of a small group there. But Trig would run a lot of our practices. He taught me all the intricacies of a single leg. The man taught me a lot, and I got to see that intelligent side of him as well, the personal side of him through your show. So my opinion is definitely skewed. It's definitely probably different than most people who, if they're just kind of watching him through Fight Pass or what they've heard. So shout out to Trig. And before we get to any more shout outs, we are going to take a quick break right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast before we get back to our top three now remaining, our top five kick KOs. Stay tuned, refill your glasses, we're gonna do the same.
Cucarachas enojadas.
Right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast for our top five kick KOs. Thanks for holding with us on that break. I had to refill my whiskey glass because I'm drinking some whiskey neat here, and the cocktail waitresses over here by the MMA Junkie Radio studio were treating me like I was MMA Junkie Radio's own family. But you had something to say about that.
They're evil.
Are they? They're nice.
They're the
to
nicest
me.
Evil people ever.
Okay.
There's only two waitresses here at Mandalay Bay at the sportsbook that pertain only to the sportsbook.
Okay.
Whenever you see more than two, they're girls that have been pulled off of the floor to help with the flow over here. And the two waitresses that we have, their names are Natalie and Zara. You probably see them all the time. And they kind of played I don't know if it's a prank or what, but I noticed that I'm not very good at doing very many things in life. But the one thing that I have been good at in my life is I can drink a lot, and I don't get sloppy. I think I get that from my dad. And I've just always been proud of that. But I noticed as I was getting older, it was getting tougher and tougher to do. And especially here at the studio, like, I'd never get sloppy because I could tell when I'm getting sloppy, but I just knew that drinks would get to me faster, you know? And it got to the point where I really just didn't want to do it that much anymore. And one night, I come to the Michael Jackson show here at Mandalay Bay, and I bring my girlfriend. We're going to watch the show, but we're early. And she goes, "You want to get a drink?" And I'm kind of like, all right, you know. So we go over here to the sports book, and the waitresses are there, and we both get the same thing. We got Red Bull vodka, because we were a little tired and figured the Red Bull would wake us up. And so I get the drink, she gets hers, we start drinking, and about halfway through her drink, she goes, "Well, I'm getting a little buzzed." And I'm thinking, awesome, because I'm getting buzzed, and she's my age, so I'm thinking, all right, this is making sense. I'm getting older. This is why this is happening to me. I can't be Frank the Tank the rest of my life. I'm going to catch up. So cool, I can relate now. As I'm saying that, the taller waitress over there that you think is so nice starts giggling. I'm like, what's so funny? And then she whispers to the other girl, and then she starts giggling. Next thing I know, they're kind of laughing uncontrollably. Like, all right, what the fuck is going on? Did you spike my drink or what? And they go, well, we heard your conversation. And so I tell them the same thing I just told you guys, you know. And they go, do you realize that because you're our friend and you've been here for so long, and rather than us come in here and bring you guys around, we just hook you up and give you like triple shots every time we give you a drink. So for the last fucking 5 years, they've been triple shotting me, and I've been thinking I'm just having one glass, but I'm really having three at a time. So when I'm at two glasses, I've had six. And I noticed that when I would go home and visit friends, I was a monster over there. I was the Hulk. But every time when I get back to Vegas, and I had even thought, I told George, I go, is it the elevation? Like, what is it that gets us? Because he's having the same problems too. And it turns out these bastards over here have been triple-shotting us the whole time we've been here.
And you guys have been here for a minute, so that's like a sizable sample size.
That's a long time. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's why I'm still on my first one.
Can you imagine the story goes deeper and, like, your mom goes, yeah, you know those times I gave you cough medicine when you were sick when you were a kid? Right? Yeah, that wasn't cough medicine. It was tequila.
So now it's funny because when we ask them for a drink, they'll kind of give us a sign, like, you want the big one or, like, a little guy? And we see them do that to our friends now. It's hilarious because you see them get trounced.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, then I guess I have you to thank for this big one. Hey, cheers. Cheers, my man. Cheers to that. And on that, cheers.
Notice I didn't tell you that story before you had your drink?
No, that was really tall. But you know what? It fueled me nicely. And maybe the stuff that I was able to hold back and bite my tongue on successfully in the first half of the show, I won't be as lucky. Maybe you won't be as lucky as well the second half. So on that note, let's keep it going with the ball in your court, if you don't mind, that is, sir. And why don't you kick us off with your number three top five kick KO.
All right. I am going to go, and I've been battling with this whole time of who I want to do next. I'm going to go with Dan Hornbuckle over Akira Gono in Sengoku. Okay, this was going to be my number one, just because I remember the sound that kick made, the angle that it came from. I'm not even sure Gono ever saw that kick come. And it fucking flattened that kid. I mean, he went down stiff as a board. And I just remember, again, Hornbuckle's just not a guy that's really known for doing these types of things. And I feel like we talked about earlier with Frank Trigg how a certain punch can change the trajectory of your career. I think for Gono, that kick, I don't know if he was ever the same after that kick.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair if you look at his record.
I have it up here behind you.
Nice. Gono's just pulling up on the big screen. This is awesome.
On the big screen, but this is the kick. And you see him moving around, and then right here, boom, he hits him. The referee knows right away he's got to stop it, and just all the people that come to his aid, you see the blood start trickling down. I mean, it was massive. And if you look at Dan Hornbuckle, like, I think even he's a little concerned about what he did because the guy's just not moving.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar with this knockout, by the way, if you go look it up, it's on YouTube, by the way. All you have to do is take one look at this and been like, oh, this would have been in, like, the UFC's package for sure. Like, for at least, like, 6-year rotation without getting moved. Like, it's one of those knockouts. But, yeah, it's also, like Ghost said, and like you can see, I just looked at it just now, that look on, I forgot that part of it, that look on Dan Hornbuckle's face. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some remorse there. And I'm glad they didn't make that rematch in Bellator when both those guys were there later.
That's right.
Because, but yeah. No,
well, he might have been better off doing it, though, because you got Michael Chandler in that. That might have been worse.
That's true. And Gono actually almost made my list for another KO, which we'll get to later. But he almost made my list for another one. Wow, now that you're mentioning that guy. That is a name that spans not just time, but weight classes. I mean, mm-hmm. You look at the names in the weight classes when you go to, you know, Akihiro Gono's Sure Dog record. That's another traveler. That's another time traveler there. Wow. You know, through eras. But that's a good one. I'm glad you brought that up, my friend. My number three is kind of in the same theory of leg kicks and getting away from the head kick. Mm-hmm. This, shout out to Tim Lane, kickboxing champion, Trent Kiss at Chris Algieri, Extreme Couture. He says something I always sided with, and as a southpaw especially, because this kick is really available in our repertoire, whereas most guys, orthodox fighters, will switch to southpaw to throw this kick. That is the most powerful kick, goes. If I was to tell you what's the most powerful kick, if you only had one kick to take out anybody, toughest guy in the world, biggest guy in the world, chinniest guy in the world, whatever the way you want to cut it, what's the one kick that's going to take everybody out?
I like the switch kick myself.
Switch kick is great, yeah, yes, and it is from that side, from a typical switch kick. And maybe if you want to think outside the ball, outside the box, you say the balls. No, the liver kick. The liver kick is the best kick. It'll shut down the toughest of men. Shout out to Ryan Couture. We used to have these crazy boxing sessions because, you know, back in the old days of Extreme Couture, you know, when we had the boxing ring, which is no longer there anymore. Of course, after practices and after the general classes and after all our training was done, that's when we'd like to, you know, for all the hardcore, you know, aspiring amateur pros to spar, you know, when we were already tired. Mm-hmm. And we would have ourselves some punching fests in that boxing ring. It was really fun times, by the way. Really good people. James Lanham, Gil Guardado, shout out to Gil, strength and conditioning coach there at Extreme Couture. But I remember Ryan Couture hitting me with a left hook to the liver, and I thought I defecated. I thought, yes, correction. I thought I shit all over the ring, I felt a warmness just go through my body, and I was like, oh my God. I thought I crapped myself. Like, even though this wasn't a kick, it was just really like, wow, the liver is no joke. So when Tim Lane says, you know, doesn't matter how tough you are, the one kick you should sharpen is your liver kick. It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And there are some liver kicks to pick from, man. I was really close to going with some Dennis Seaver spinning back kick action, because the spinning back kick from the right side, the liver, by the way, is only on one side. For people that don't know, it's on your right side, if you right below your kidney. So that's why I say people have to switch to southpaw. You'll see often people switch to southpaw before throwing this kick. The one I picked, though, goes... was Anthony Pettis versus Donald Cerrone, man. Donald Cerrone, still to this day, one of the toughest dudes, you know, even after the recent Jorge Masvidal TKO. He is one of the toughest dudes, the toughest chins. Just go look at that Nate Diaz fight. But it doesn't matter how tough your chin is. A good liver kick will take you out of your game early, as we saw when Anthony Pettis faced Donald Cerrone. UFC on Fox 6, 2013, wow. My friend. That's my
I remember that kick. I remember that one, yeah. I remember the thud it made. You just see the reaction. You see his body just kind of
crumples.
Fold over. I mean, it happens to the toughest of guys, right?
He wasn't even trying to defend the follow-up shots to the head. He crumpled to a turtle position and held his body and put his forehead on the mat as he was on his knees. And Anthony Pettis lands about at least two solid right hands to the face, and Donald Cerrone doesn't look like he even thinks about blocking those for 1 second, because his mind is on his liver. And if you were following the recent FC road trip for Flow Combat, Dwayne and Hunter went around kind of the Southwest there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you saw, but it was really cool. They stopped in at Cub Swanson's gym. And I know MMA Junkie is a big fan of Cub Swanson, okay?
He gave me my first leg kick.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't realize this, but I guess Dwayne's pretty tight with Cub as well, too. And they visited him, and they did a POV cam with a GoPro, where Dwayne and Hunter took turns with a GoPro strapped on their head. So it was really cool. You got a POV cam of a fighter. And it was Cub Swanson, of all people, the most technical, one of the most beautiful watch fighters in the history of our game, right? And you see him kind of like working and like kind of doing basic, I'm going to jab, okay, here's a hook, here's a jab, hook, cross. And he's kind of like doing his basic warm-up as a fighter would. But then he starts going to the body because, again, he's not trying to hurt these guys and concuss them. And they're his friends, right? And these are journalists, right? You know what I'm saying? Like Cub, you know more than me. He's obviously, you know, only so much of a nice guy because he's a fighter, but he's a nice guy. He's a good dude.
Yeah,
right, right.
He's looking out for you.
Right, he's looking out. He's not trying to take cheap shots or trying to flex his muscles. And he's a veteran. He's a good dude from all accounts.
Not trying to overream you.
But he was going to these guys' bodies, though, goes. And it was great because Hunter and Dwayne aren't you know, I think they have maybe, you know, some sprinkle of experience, so I don't want to write them off. But for the example, and it's truth, they're not martial artists. So they were learning, essentially. It's funny to hear them say this because you hear, like, you know, you were saying earlier with the leg kicks, like, you've taken leg kicks. We've seen this on video. It goes from Machida to, you know, other people and stuff like that, right? We've seen you take shots, and it's not fun. And from my own experience, it's not fun, but you really kind of get that from watching that video, because you hear Dwayne and Hunter say, I would rather have taken the headshots from Cub Swanson than the body shots. Yeah. And that's a true fact. I mean, body shots are...
He's really good at them, too.
Yeah, so I had to have some kind of body shot representation, in other words. So I chose Pettis for Cerrone.
Okay. I have a body shot one as well.
Is it your number two?
It's not. I think I'm going to save it for honorable mention.
Okay, keep that in mind for honorable mentions, though. Unless you want to say it now, you say it now. No rules here, so...
Number two... Now I think I'm going to hit a little bit into obvious land.
All right.
I'm going to go with Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort.
Okay. Nice. Yes. Honorable mention for me, but go ahead.
That fight, I believe, was here at Mandalay Bay. And I was in a ballroom. So when an event sells out at either MGM or Mandalay Bay, they open up these ballrooms that they have. They're basically convention space. But if you ever go to like a basketball game or a hockey game, you know, up on top where they keep score, it's four sides, right? I'm not sure if they get that from the arena or what they... Well, they couldn't because they had the fight. Well, maybe they could. They lower that down into the middle of a room. So there's four sides with a big screen, basically.
Okay.
And so people will pile in there and watch these fights. And that place erupted, man. When he threw that kick, Vitor Belfort's face just caves in. He goes down. And I think it's one of the most memorable kicks in our sport. And the funny thing about... Well, I don't know if it's funny, but... We had Vitor Belfort on our show years after that had happened. When we do our show, If you've never been to our studio, in front of us are these glass windows and then the sports book. Well, we can tell who's outside, and there were a bunch of guys, autograph seekers, right, that were outside. And they were waiting for us to finish the interview, and when Vitor comes out, they go, "Hey, man, can you sign a couple things for us?" He says, "No problem." Vitor's one of the nicest guys ever. And the guy opens up his book, and he wanted Vitor Belfort to sign 10 of those pictures of Anderson kicking him in the face. So the picture is Anderson's foot driven into Vitor Belfort's face.
Wow.
This is where I give Vitor all the credit in the world.
Jeez.
Because anybody, I think, had the right to maybe flip out. A, why do I have to sign 10 of them? You're obviously going to go out and make money of them. But of all the pictures, this is the one you want me to sign? Why not a picture of me knocking someone else's head off or something, right? But the guy had the balls to ask it, and Vitor signs them. Signs all 10 of them. And George asked him. He said, sorry about that. He goes, it's not one of our listeners. It's just somebody that sees the preview and
right,
comes down.
Right, right.
And he says, no problem. He goes, I don't have a problem signing it. And George asked him, do you mind? Why? Like, why don't you have a problem? And he says, because it's part of history. He goes, and I understand that that kick was a moment in our history.
Wow.
And I can't pretend like it didn't happen. And in a way, he's right. That kick is a part of MMA history.
Yeah.
And it's props for him for even signing that. But it is a kick that I've seen not very many artists outside of MMA take the time to paint things in MMA. But we have, I think it's a one of like 70 prints of that kick. It's called a Gicle or something like that. That was given to us by the Fight Museum
here. Yeah, yeah.
And you'll see that kick everywhere, man. And
absolutely.
It's very iconic. So that's why I went with that one.
Dude, I'm so glad. Again, it was almost on my list. Mm-hmm. If I were to go to maybe like what was probably deserving to be on the list, this should be on a number on a top five list for sure. So no questions there that it deserves a spot by any means. And I'm glad you put it on because, first of all, that is ballsy for that guy to ask that question. Before I go further, do you think that guy would ask that question if it was like, he got Jesus Vitor. Do you think if you asked 1997 Vitor, if he would have got the same response?
No, he would have gotten teed off on it, I think.
Yeah, no, but no, I'm glad you brought that up because as a martial artist, a front kick was a real big part of a weapon coming from Taekwondo and then Kempo Karate, kind of my martial art lineage where I have, quote-unquote credentials, although I'm not a really big believer in belts, to be honest, so I don't really quote those, but I am a big believer in the front kick, and it was a favorite kick of mine when I was competing in those martial arts. And, it's not meant for a KO kick, so I didn't use it for such, but it was kind of, upsetting because, when I would get into Muay Thai, which I loved, and it wasn't a red team versus blue team because I'm pride myself in being one of the few people that, part of the reason, maybe that's why it makes me a decent analyst, because I can kind of get away from that red team versus blue team when it comes to, like, bias stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I appreciated, the difference between the Muay Thai teep and the martial arts front kick. They're two different kicks, right? And usually people are very either or because, again, this is an era where I grew up with it. Like I just kind of explained earlier in the podcast where, stay away from this martial art. This martial art's the correct one, Dan. And a lot of people listening to this, probably if you grew up doing martial arts in the 90s, you were relegated to the same because UFC didn't wake us up to all the information that you need everything, right?
Right.
So it was really cool to see that kick because this was a kick that, of course, only Anderson Silva could do, right? Where he combined the power and force of a Muay Thai teep kick that is meant for more pushing,
mm-hmm,
and the snap and explosiveness of a snapping front kick where it kind of snaps from the knee joint, right? Whereas yeah. opposed to a kind of a pushing, like a cop kicking down the door, which is more of a Muay Thai teep, mm-hmm, for people that I guess aren't familiar with those two kicks.
Some guys use it to create distance.
Yes, that's the common way to break down. But neither of those scenarios are essentially knockouts really attached to those, right? Whether you're pushing or you're snapping, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some are more forceful by nature of pounds per pressure you're putting, more behind a teep than a snapping kick. But neither really knock you out. The fact that Anderson created a hybrid, and I'm getting really in a nerdy technical realm here, but that's why I appreciate this pick, because he found that perfect balance of power, snap, technique, and explosion, and he surprised us all, maybe even himself, but definitely Vitor Belfort with that. And to Vitor's credit, man, he is a really nice guy. Neil Melanson, who I just mentioned, my grappling coach, trained him for over a year for that camp, because if you remember, that fight was scheduled before UFC 126. It was two camps for both those men for that fight to happen, if you remember history correctly.
Remember the weigh-ins?
Yeah, the weigh-in with the mask, when a classic weigh-in, and Neil coached him for that, and there wasn't a lot of publicity on Neil or positive publicity on Belfort. But man, Neil told me, shared me some stories of Vitor essentially taking him in, and I'll kind of leave it at that, where I gained a lot of respect for Belfort. So as easy as it is to jump on these narratives, I'm glad you shared that story, Goes, because it's really important. Now our number two, my friend. Do you have your number two set, or was that your number two? I'm sorry.
That was my number two. That was it's on you.
Oh, my number two. Look at that. See, I refill my drink, and Goes did it. Now showing in the second part. All right, my number two is I said there was a soccer kick on my list that Goes pointed to with the Icon, Jason Miller versus Frank Trigg. Now, I'm glad Goes pointed to Icon, because if you were going to think soccer kick, which more than deserves a part in this list, by the way, if you're going to think soccer kick, you're probably going to think Pride, right?
Right.
Which is glad you put Icon. Well, mine did lead me to Pride. And when you think Pride, there's a lot of options, right?
Shogun, Vanderlei.
Well, Shogun, perfect example. Let's just narrow it down to Shogun. Even narrowing it down, quote unquote, to Shogun, there's still a lot of options for soccer kicks.
Well, mine
is Shogun. But the one that I chose, I almost went with Gono, because according to Sherdog, that's technically his first stoppage, right? Akihiro Gono, yes, by the way. Yeah, the guy that fought at Lightweight Mike Chang, yes, that guy fought Shogun at 203. Yes. Okay, but no, this was Shogun's epic 205 run, but this was only his second fight. This was only his second fight in the 205 run. But his second fight in the 205 run was not just against a notable name, but it was the fight that put Shogun on the map. That was against Rampage Jackson. Okay, now if you revisionist history, Shogun's 205 run speaks for itself, but if you really want to get to the specifics, Shogun was not known. He fought Kanehara. Sorry, I don't want to do a Goldberg and like slaughter the Japanese name, but I don't know the first name. But
his brother was bigger at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And the second fight, though, that year, 205, was Rampage Jackson. And that was at Pride FC Total Elimination 2005. So this is 12 years ago, people. This is crazy. And it wasn't so much the soccer kicks that put him away. So in that sense, like, Dan, you could have picked a bunch of better soccer kicks, because technically soccer kick, you're right. This might be a way of me sliding in knees to this, because even though this isn't top five knees, and top five knees is more than deserving of its own category, yes, Shogun's knees arguably didn't do most of the damage when you watch the entirety of that fight. But just to show you the age of kind of what we were talking about when Goes brought up Trey Teligman versus Tim Sylvia, this was still an age where death was not only a possibility, not just some, death was not a sensationalist angle that it would be looked at upon now. This was a part of the demographic, people, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, whether you're a purist or not, this was a part of the demographic, whether you liked it or not. And it just showed you that Rampage was probably done about 2 minutes before that fight was stopped, right? Anybody watching that fight could see that, especially when you look at it in retrospect now. But it wasn't until Rampage, and even the commentators were almost crying, pleading Rampage's case that he was done, that he's too tough for his own good. You hear Boss Rutten pleading the case, but it wasn't until Rampage crumpled. Not even until he crumpled. It wasn't until after he crumpled where he took three soccer kicks from Shogun that were just brutal. We talk about that level of degradation that I kind of jokingly talked about my adolescence feeling as a teen, to what we see and what we feel for these fighters from watching it from an entertainment, quote-unquote, aspect. Shogun vs. Rampage earns a spot as my number two and earns a spot as my representation for the brutality, at least from a young Dan Tom, experiencing soccer kicks. So, yeah, that's
I like
mine.
That one. Rampage was a little too tough for his own good in a few fights, right?
Right.
Vanderlei flying through the ropes, he's had some pretty bad ones for being a guy that's put other people in that situation.
I didn't watch this one live, though. This was more your. Did you watch this one live?
So Pride, we would just stay up all night, man, and just run those. And sometimes we would even do post fight shows, because people would. There were a few cards where the UFC would have a card, and it would lead right into a Pride card. So people would come over our house and they would bring like their own pillow and blanket, because they knew Pride's not going to end till like 3 a.m. Right. And you might just sleep here. And it was a fun night. So, yeah, I believe this one we did see live.
That's badass, man. See, that's my big regret. I mean, I'll come clean. I didn't get to watch this epic Shogun 2005 run. So a lot of mine is second watch history because
Twitter back then.
Yeah, I mean, I knew the big stuff. I knew the Shamrock versus Ortiz's and stuff like that.
That's
but
like
again, it wasn't until 2006, the year after this. It wasn't like I was far off, granted. But if I'm being honest, it wasn't until the year after this, 2006, where I could honestly consider myself a hardcore fan and tell you what was going on. And unfortunately, as you know, Pride was already on its way out. But yeah, that definitely made it on my list. Wow, my friend, we are already at number one. Do you have your number one, sir?
I do.
Are you feeling good about it?
I mean, I think I'm Captain Obvious, but I can explain why it's there. But there are so many other ones that I feel like are just as devastating. And this one, I guess I'll just tell you what it is.
Yeah,
I ended up going with Gonzaga over Crow Cop.
Nice.
And the reason I picked that one, it's at UFC 70.
Yep.
I remember exactly where I was. But before that fight, when you're breaking down a fight, there's the same type of outcomes for every fight that can happen, but they're not all realistic, right? So when you're breaking down that fight, of course a head kick knockout is in the books. It's Mirko Krokop.
Yeah.
And the deadliest left foots you'll ever see. That outcome, however, is not really there. Nobody's calling Gonzaga by knockout. For one, he didn't really throw too many of those kicks. And the one he hits Mirko with isn't really like the prettiest of kicks, but he fucking threw it.
Yeah.
And he hit him with it. And I think the reason he landed it was for that reason. He just didn't do it very much. And I don't think Gonzaga...
No setup, just threw it.
Yeah, he just threw it and hit him. And it was one of the ugliest things ever. But we see Krokop's leg bend. Just the way he folded over. It was an outcome that nobody called going in.
Yes.
Nobody called that fight to end in that fashion. So you go through this moment where there's times where something crazy like that happens. And everybody jumps up and screams. This wasn't one of those. This was one of those where everybody was, like, quiet. We were just like, did that just happen? And I just remember thinking, wow, shouldn't we all be screaming? But everybody was really quiet.
Yes.
We all looked at each other like, what the fuck? And sure enough, man, there's Krokop, the guy laying on his back. For one, we all thought that was going to be Gonzaga. And two, via a head kick like that, so devastating. So that's why I went with that one as my number one.
There are very few moments in the long span of MMA fandom that any of us can claim. There are very few moments that make time not just stand still, but almost go backwards. It feels so bizarre. Verdum Fedor, that's definitely one. I remember that's one of my favorite MMA Junkie episodes, by the way, where everybody calls it as bizarro versions of himself.
Because it didn't make sense.
Yes, but that is one of them, though, right? Krokop Gonzaga, how is that not one of MMA's moments where it didn't make sense? And I'm glad you put this on, because not only is this my honorable mention, but it is, I guess you could say, at the top of my honorable mention, in the sense that it almost made this list, because I referenced my buddy Bronson, I referenced my buddy Steve, who really got me in MMA. He's the guy who signed up for Extreme Couture before they were opened, when they were just an office building. He's the guy who got me to sign up to them and kind of got me back into this. He played bass for my band, Night Runs Red. Shout out to my punk rock days. He was the bass player in my band. No martial arts experience. Hockey kid from Ohio, Canadian. You know what I'm saying? Like, GSP, I think, was his favorite fighter. But he got me into it. And Krokop was his other favorite fighter. Mm-hmm. And I used to make fun of him because I didn't know mixed martial arts at the time. And I would see these, you know, this is 2004, 2005. And he'd have all these, like, Krokop t-shirts. And he had the Krokop t-shirt where Krokop's doing the splits and it says Destiny Awaits.
Nice.
And, you know, me being a freaking stupid young, you know, friend, stuff that would be considered, you know, freaking maybe offensive, or you know, like, yeah, or you know, even like homophobic, or even like, yeah, Destiny awaits in his pants doing the splits. Yeah, that's what you want, Steve. Yeah, that's what you like. And just, you know, messing with your friend, like, kind of giving him shit, you know, like, yeah, you're like some dude doing ripped, doing splits on your t-shirt. You're saying a lot about us, Steve. I didn't know this about you. And I would give him like endless shit for his Krokop t-shirts. And then he showed me, you know, stuff like Alberto Del Rio knockout for Pride 1, which almost made this list, by the way. That's another kind of honorable mention. I don't want to cheat away too much of my honorable mentions here. But Krokop, it's so much place on this list. It's so deserving on this list for so many ways, it's not even funny. And I remember going, okay, well, let's see this guy for real. Because, again, I came in at the tail end of Pride, right? Mm-hmm. I just missed the Fedor Krokop matchup.
Oh.
But I did see the Eddie Sanchez, and that was kind of underwhelming, because if you guys remember the Eddie Sanchez fight, that was his first
fight in the UFC.
And that was one of those typical Tyson fights where you could tell the guy was defeated before he got into the ring. I mean, Krokop didn't even get a chance to throw a kick before Eddie Sanchez was going down with punches.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did we have this build-up, right, before this Gonzaga thing that Ghost mentions, But we had not just the buildup and expectation, but we had even our own form of blue balls because we were promised. There was so much promise, right? It's there's true. No better highlight reel in MMA history than Crow Cop. And there's so much promise, and we almost get blue balls from this Eddie Sanchez fight. Yes, he wins. Yes, he gets the stoppage. But it's not fulfilling. It's not what we wanted.
It's not what the UFC wanted.
It's not what the UFC wanted.
I think Eddie Sanchez, personally, went into that fight thinking, just don't get head kicked.
I think
don't
so, too.
Don't be part of this highlight reel.
And I hate accusing of a guy taking a step early. You will rarely hear me say that. Or you hear me, you know, taking the door early. But this was one of those instances where I felt that. And even if you didn't feel that, you couldn't blame people for feeling that. Because there was a lot of hype, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, even more so, kind of long-winded. I completely second that is more than worthy your choice for Crow Cop Gonzaga.
And he came out to the Pride music, didn't he?
God, yes. And that was 2007, dude, a decade ago.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
It's insane.
It's insane. It feels like yesterday in many ways. Well, my number one, I felt it was important. I felt, you know, there's almost these picks like you just said where you're like, I'm almost remiss if I don't pick this. And there are way too many of those for this category. So we'll get to them, I'm sure, because we had some really good solid top five lists contributed using the hashtag #ProtectYourNeckPodcast. Thank you for those of you who did that. So we'll touch on those in our submissions and transitions segment. But for my number one goes, I went with something kind of crazy and out there. It's so obscure that I felt that I went with obscurity to take over deservedness because deservedness is so subjective and there's so many deserving categories. And maybe it's because I love obscure. Maybe it's because I love Taekwondo because I'm originally from Taekwondo. So when a hook kick is such a rare kick to score a knockout with, but from a heavyweight, I had to put my man Sean Jordan knocking out Derek Lewis because not only that, this is the one knockout. Forget KO kicks, okay? Let's add elbows, let's add knees, let's add punches. If there's any KO in all of MMA history, not even just UFC, if there's one KO goes, you know you're a pro wrestling fan, so you're gonna feel me. If there's one KO where you can superimpose and edit JR going "by God" over it. There is no better choice than Sweet Chin Music, Sweet Chin Music. Yeah. Deshaun Jordan versus Derek Lewis. That GIF, I can't find it. I've been trying to find it. Someone took it off. But there, when it happened, someone, God bless them, made a fucking GIF where it was Sean Jordan knocking out Derek Lewis with the JR Sweet Chin Music redub over it. It was gold. And that makes my number one.
You better be careful. He's going to tweet to you like he did Shirdog yesterday.
Was he gonna? Oh yeah, yeah. That's right. I saw that. Yeah, it gave respect to Junkie though. I appreciate
that. Here's the thing though. That kick that you're mentioning, I love that kick too. It's not meant to be a knockout kick.
No.
Okay, but he caught him in the right part of his head where it just became a knockout kick. I mean, he could have thrown that kick a million times. I don't think he would have knocked him out.
No.
It was just right time, right place. You don't see it very often, so. It was an awesome kick, dude.
You want to talk about outlier knockouts. That's
and so short.
And it wasn't even like the kick that finished it, like you said. I mean, technically it was punches, and it didn't even look like heavy punches, where Brian Stann thought James Waring called it early. But James Waring had a really good eye because Lewis was super dazed. Like, he never recovered from the initial kick, even though the follow-up ground and pound. So for that reason, although there were follow-up punches, I still included this for not just my top five, but
that
my number one. So
yeah, the kick.
Yep. Wow, that was fun. Should we, before we get to our honorable mentions, which is tempting, let's do the listener some justice and pull up, I'll pull up the Twitter machine list, and if you want to pull up the MMA Junkie Combat chat, since
all right,
that's more your territory, sir, and that's also where we get the best suggestions, because let's face it, if there are hardcore fans to be found, it's in that MMA Junkie Combat chat, so, you're going to pull it up on the big screen?
Oh, my God.
Good. All right, let's do it from the combat chat, actually. We got way
more. This is going to be depressing, because you're going to think, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, I know, probably. Let's start from, you want to start from the top? Want to go from the top? Make it easy? All right, you do the first one, the first submission there.
Let's see, we got Gabriel Killiam. He says, Saman over Gordon. That was a good one, too.
That's a really good one, especially, I mean.
Remember the thud.
Even minus the rest in peace, by the way, a big rest in peace shout out to Josh Saman. Even minus that is deserving, so don't get it twisted.
He obviously has more, but we'll give him a couple. How about Hall Musasi? I mean, that's a fight where Hall was in trouble. He was losing that fight. And
as somebody who, by the way, remind me this one. You want a good street fight story? Ask me about this one. I'm not going to I don't want to come off as a douchebag here or a brag or anything, but one of my few street fight stories involves a
spinning head kick KO. So really? I would be more than happy to share that on a future.
What end are you on?
Oh, the good, positive the end. One? The only reason why I'm bringing it, I wouldn't bring it up if I was on the other end.
Bill Baroni told the Streets Fight story on our show one time where he got beat up by a male cheerleader.
I can tell a really good one where I got beat up. I'm not afraid to say that. But this one actually was one where I surprisingly, one of the few ones where I was on the upper end, my friend. Uh-huh. Yes, for that reason, Hall Musasi, great addition, Gabe Killian.
Let's see, John Rico.
Ooh, yeah, John Rico.
He's got
Silver Belfort. He fills you on that.
He's got that one. He's got Pettis versus Lozon. That's a good one.
Ooh, Croak. One of my favorite, by the way, who I'm thinking about doing an article on, just because he's like, I'm so hipster and obscure.
Uh-huh.
Igor Voychanchin is one of my favorite guys to look back on. Like that, I love that he included Igor Voychanchin versus Mykor Kokop.
You know, you scared me because
what?
That's on my honorable mention.
Okay.
And when you mentioned the Pride Total Elimination Tournament.
Yes.
I thought you were going to go that route.
Almost. Very close.
I said, oh, no, he's going to take it. But
while we're on the Igor Voychanchin, I said this on Twitter before, so it might be new. But when I talk about like fantasy crossover era matchups, when you can take anybody from any era and crossover, you know who was on the top of my list?
Who?
A prime Igor Voychanchin versus 205 Rumble Johnson. You don't need you don't even need another card. Like just schedule that and you can have my $50. Like
yeah,
you
don't even need a fucking card. Show up.
Judges don't need to show up. You'll get fucking people to pay your card. Like that, no matter how you cut that fight in a time machine, that's gonna be fucking disastrous goodness, right?
Oh yeah.
Prime boy chance in
Let's see. Aaron Fisher says Franklin versus Nate Corey.
Oh, that's a classic. That's a classic.
Does he walk on his hands?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's not a head kick KO, though. That's
no.
Yeah.
Let's see. Some more. Maybe he can...
Let's see more maybe on there.
Let's see. How about Brown versus Overeem?
Oh, that's right, a good one. That almost made my list because of front kick.
Okay.
That almost made my list originally, but then I thought of Silver Belfort. I'm like, well, that kind of tops it. And then Silver Belfort, sadly, didn't make my hipster cut. So
I like this one.
But I like that.
John Rico again with Pete Williams over Mark Coleman.
That's right, written down right
with
here. That was really close because that was an early one that was like, that was one of the early ones. Another one I'll mention for my honorable mentions because I don't think it got listed. But yeah, Pete Williams was Mark Coleman. I watched that actually early this morning just to rewatch that one because I had to get another look at it. Great pick, John Rico. Great pick.
Let's go with Wan Lee Trenton.
Yes.
Over here, this one stands out for me because this is that front kick again from a teammate. This is Lyoto Machida throwing basically the same kick that Anderson threw on Vitor, and he hit Randy Couture with that one.
As a karate black belt named Daniel, who was tortured and made fun of by family and friends with the name of Daniel San, of course this kick, this knockout hits a special place with me. That said, I'm an Extreme Couture homer and was in Extreme Couture at the time, and man, was it a quiet place to watch that fight. Wow. Wow, it was quiet. So, I mean, maybe if it wasn't because of my bias, that would have been on my list. So that absolutely deserves to be on the list, though. All joking aside, great, great pick.
You know what? I like this one from Aaron Menard. It's he's got two really good ones.
Yes.
Eves Edwards and Josh Thompson.
Fuck
that
yes,
was early
Aaron.
On.
Fuck yes, Aaron.
And Anthony Njikuani over Chris Hordecki. They're actually very similar if you watch them. Similar situations where one guy's trying to get out of range. Some people will say, he was running away.
Yep.
He wasn't running away.
No.
He was just trying to get out of there. And, yeah, they both kind of got hit with similar kicks.
Yeah, man. I'm glad that I remember the Hordecki Njikuani. Hordecki was a guy that was a prospect at one time. People forget. I remember him because I was an Extreme Couture guy where when shout-out to Sean Compkins, when he was alive, he would come down to Las Vegas one a lot with the Hordecki and all those guys. So I was actually lucky enough to train with Tompkins and see sessions with Hordecki and those guys. And, man, that was an impressive one. And if I was going with, like, what should be on the list, not hipster choices, Thompson Eve Edwards is probably my number one right there. So definitely a big shout-out Aaron Maynard on that one.
If you go to any UFC and you watch the Bab O'Reilly video that starts, that's a given. That's one that's probably never going to leave.
Probably one of the longest tenured ones if you really want to break down that whole list.
Wow,
that's a good one. Any more on this list?
Let's see if anyone. Etem and Barbosa is one that I think we brought up a little earlier.
Yeah.
How about Krylov Herdman?
That was a more recent one, but that's a good switch kick. You like switch kicks, so that's got to be up there for you.
Who else?
I think. What do you?
Okay, Anthony Johnson, Kevin Burns.
That was a good one.
Oh,
well,
this
like Matt
one
Hallen
was on my
Martin
list.
Munoz,
this is on my honorable mention.
Yes,
Rashad Evans
one.
And Sean Salmon.
Great one, Fish.
I remember that one was on an Ultimate Fight Night, I believe, or something like that. But which one was it? I think I have it on here.
That was the one that showed you wrestlers could kick, essentially, right?
Yeah, that's why I liked it.
You're like,
because
oh, wait.
Now you're starting to see, okay, these guys are complete. It was UFC Fight Night, and I remember they went to commercial, I think just because Salmon wasn't even moving, and when they came back, he was still on the ground. Like, it was brutal. That's a good one. I love
that you mentioned that one, because my buddy that I said who got me to Extreme Couture, Steve, who had no martial arts experience, I was a little jealous because despite my black belts in karate and taekwondo, Steve would throw like a tie kick on the heavy bag and throw it heavier than any kick in my arsenal that I could possibly throw. And it was very emasculating for a young Dan Tom. And he was like, well, Joey Varner taught me this kick. You know, shout out to young Joey Varner, one of the original XC coaches.
So he trained a lot with the Team Tompkins guys, too.
Steve introduced me to Joey Varner, so that's how I became friends with Joey, by the way, back in like 06. But it was one of the Evan Salmon thing. It just showed you kind of what my buddy Steve showed me, that it didn't matter what your background was, these techniques are real. And if you're put in the hands of the right person, like a car, it can be a dangerous, dangerous weapon.
For sure.
So great, great, great pick there, Fisher. I guess a little bit of our honorable mentions.
Sure.
I'll kick off one of them, the old school ones. This is the one that got kicked off on the 11th hour. If anything on my honorable mentions came closest, it was this one, and it's probably my oldest pick. Now, this is from, people might not recognize if I say Mars Reality Fighting.
Oh, I remember
that. But if
that.
I Oleg talk to you about, yes, Oleg Taktarov versus Henzo Gracie in 1996, one of the best upkick KOs, by the way, so it represents the upkick KO. But as well as the old school KO, I mean, that documentary back on the street fighting and the Henzo Gracie, if you remember that, how they used that clip of that Henzo upkick was just beautifully edited. And then I went going back and watching it live, just seeing that, and the announcers were just befuddled because, you know, I think Tony Ferguson would get one on the Ultimate Fighter series, and we would see other upkicks, Anderson Silva, illegal ones, Yushin Okami. And we would see different upkicks, but very sprinkled to very different results. But this was when people didn't even know what the fuck jiu-jitsu was. I mean, so the commentary was completely befuddled when Henzo Gracie leveled Ole
Tatarov. And it was our opportunity to see another Gracie. We were so used to seeing Hoist, and finally we get to see Henzo fight. And I remember that fight because I remember thinking, all right, I was getting to the stage where I was saying, okay, but Hoist is so good because he's taking advantage of these guys who don't really have that much of a background. You got a guy, a Sambo champion, and yes, Oleg Taktarov. I go, now the tables have turned. This guy's got that background. And I remember this fight because I remember sitting in my living room like 4 hours before the fight even started, because I felt like somebody could slip in and change the channel on the TV, or I just didn't want to miss it. And I watched this fight, and they never really got to grapple, and it drove me bananas.
Yes, right, right.
But, I mean, hats off to Henzo. You know, he got him. He got him
early, too.
And that was, I think, it was the co-main event, and then the main event was, or it may have been the main event. Remember Tom Erickson and Maurilio Bustamante
won
that card?
Yes,
that's
it was.
That's where Bustamante butt-scooted for about half an hour.
Well, it's crazy, too, because that ended early, and not just saying ended early as in like a minute or two that it did, but when you look at these fights, when you go back to these fights, you're like, oh, what, Matt Hume beat him in round one? Like, yeah, round one, 20 minutes round one. Like, you have to look at the fine print back then, because, guys, it wasn't 5 minute rounds back then.
No.
There was no sanctioning bodies.
You're lucky,
I mean,
if you had a round.
Fuck, I mean, this was do or die, kill or be killed, and it got, I mean, you want to talk about shit shows when guys run out of gas come the second round? Y'all are spoiled. Y'all are spoiled. Go watch 90s MMA with no time limit and complain about people getting gassed out.
All right, I'm going to show you one here. This is one of my favorite. This is To the Body.
Ooh.
David Loazzo and Charles Chainsaw McCarthy. He throws the kick there, hits him right in the liver. Boom.
I'm glad I didn't put Dennis Seaver, because I would have been completely embarrassed, because how did I forget about the Crow Loazzo, one of my favorites ever?
That was one of my favorite shots to the body. You watch it in slow motion, you see his body just cave in.
One of the topics we almost did, by the way, peeling behind the curtain because of the fight next week, and this is one I'm kind of glad we didn't do it, because it's a little too broad, and we would have came up with a lot of the same ones, which was welterweight wars. But if you want to talk about MMA wars in general, David Loazzo versus Rich Franklin should be on a top five list on everybody.
I mean,
you want to talk about guys testing their limits and physical boundaries. That was one of those fights where it was like digging from the bottom of the barrel. Great honorable mention there with David Loazzo.
That one, I remember that fight, especially because back then the backstage bonuses were very high. And I remember Rich Franklin getting a really big backstage bonus for that fight. One that made another fighter
didn't
very
they save
jealous.
That card? But didn't they save that card, though? Because that card wasn't going too well, at least from the business aspect, right?
Uh-huh. So I'll tell you an off-air story when we stop the podcast.
Okay, I'm going to ask you that next
You'll
time.
You'll like it.
Little tidbits, whether you're getting real stories, which you've got a couple here, by the way, so don't be upset that you're not getting this one, folks. Or a little hints. That's what you're going to get here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. And you get even more of them when you listen to MMA Junkie Radio. Do you have any more honorable mentions, my man?
I do.
Name them off, please. I've only got two more, but I want to hear yours first.
I have Mirko Krokop over Wanderlei Silva.
Great one. Absolutely.
That kick. It's just... Wanderlei was obviously undersized, but that was just the warrior mentality that they would have in Japan.
If we did life-changing like knockouts, whether or not that was proven by the statistics, which I don't think it necessarily was, but just life-changing as in brutality, that is on my top five, sir.
Yeah, he was down for quite a while. And
you see the Wanderlei was on his head immediately? Oh, yeah. I remember that. Oh, God.
He was the king of those type of fights. He told a story on our show one time. I don't remember who his original opponent was. I want to say it was a Japanese fighter. And the week of the fight... they ask him to go up to Sakakibara's suite, and they say, hey, listen, we need an opponent for Mark Hunt. How about you fight Mark Hunt? And he thought, well, fuck, Mark Hunt's a heavyweight. This guy's huge. And he goes, I don't know if I want to do something like that. And they go, what if we double your paycheck? And so he said he thought about it, and he said, give me a sec to think about it. And he went back to his room, and he didn't even want to call his wife and say, like, hey, this is what do you think? So he just put his head on the pillow and thought about it and said, fuck it. And he went back upstairs, took the fight, and that was a crazy war. If you go back and watch that fight, you'll remember Wanderlei was knocked out at one point in that fight. And you're going to need this. Your thing's not charging, by the way.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
And he was knocked out and brought back to life by Mark Hunt in that fight. So... I had to put Wanderlei and Krokop. And then after that, I had Krokop and Volchanchin.
Nice.
But that was covered by the junkie.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
absolutely.
I guess that's the end of mine.
You know, your list and the participants and junkies, by the way, came strong. If you are listening and want to participate, by the way, use hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast to submit any of your top five lists or, you know, hot takes or technical questions when we do breakdown shows. But either way, it's going to be the same hashtag. Everybody's list was so good. There wasn't much left from what I have actually written. There's plenty to pull from mine, but as far as what I actually took the time to write down and prep for this, there's only two, and there are two relevant ones, which shows how good and wide spanning everybody's list was, which was Rodriguez versus Feely, because that flip kick was something that I would see in Taekwondo, but it was more of a point sparring thing. Mm-hmm. And I was, oh, cool, Shogun kind of busted out, you know, in Pride a little bit, but, you know, against Rampage, but you were like, it didn't land too cleanly. You're like, there's not a lot of leverage and pop to that kick. Maybe
you threw one against Nogueira as well.
Yeah, I think so, you're right. And it was, but it wasn't one of those things where it was like, okay, I don't know if anyone's going to finish by this, you know, it's going to be some freak thing. But we would start to see that once Rodriguez would hit Feely, even Paige Van Zandt, of all people, would finish a kick from that. I mean, it was just insane. A kick that was in the lexicon, even from traditional martial artists like myself's background for quite some time. I didn't think I'd see it in MMA. I see it in MMA. Fine. Okay. You win MMA. We do see it, but it's still not a finisher. You know, this was used for point sparring. That's what I used it for. Mm-hmm. And judging by the leverage you could see, but then you have these freak athletes that just evolve the game, that whole 100 monkeys kind of theory, and Rodriguez did that.
I did have one more.
Yeah.
Gerard Goddard.
Oh, Tuli, yes. That was a little cool one. Almost made my list, too.
That was a crazy one.
I mean, you want to talk about just realism, I think, is the key word behind that, right? I mean, opening eyes and realism.
And there's a rumor that his tooth got stuck in Gerard's foot, and Gerard got an infection from that. But I think Art Davey came on our show and said that didn't happen. The tooth actually flew.
Announcing desk, right? Announcing desk claimed something about coming across their way.
That was the way they started the night off.
Wow, man. Well, I think we might not hopefully we might not have hit your top five with our list, but with the honorable mentions that came strong, thank you again. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if you're listening, your top five kick KOs were represented fairly today. If not, go ahead and yell at me. I don't mind. At the POIN podcast for the podcast, or yell at me personally at the MM analyst for any of that, because it's all fun and games, man. There's no right or wrong answers here. This is just to reflect on the sport. That's why I love having people like Goz who have been a part of the sport, whether it's from a media, fan perspective, and many more. I mean, this guy's seen a lot, man, and I really appreciate his time. So hopefully you guys appreciated this episode. Before we get going, Goz, anything coming up? I know the show's gone through some changes, good changes. You guys have expanded to YouTube, Facebook Live. Anything that you want to plug here before we get out?
Well, next week's a huge week for us. The UFC's in town, and we're going to have a lot of great in-studio guests that really kind of span some of these areas that we were talking about. We're going to start things off with Tony Ferguson on Monday. He's going to be in studio.
Nice.
Okay. We're going to follow that up with Ensign Anyway. He's going to be in studio on Tuesday. Wednesday, we may have the Texas Crazy Horse in studio with us. And then Thursday, we're going to have Michael Chandler, Bellator lightweight champion. And Friday, we're going to cap that off with Viviano Fernandez in studio, along with Antonio Nogueira.
God damn. Now, you guys, obviously, I listen to you guys on iTunes forever. You guys been there forever. But now you guys got YouTube and Facebook Live, right? We can come catch the show?
Yeah, those have been huge for us. So okay. You can catch the show on YouTube. You can catch the show Facebook Live. Those two avenues you can catch our show live as it's going on.
All right.
If you have Sirius, we still are on Sirius. We're on at night. And then we're on again the next morning during morning traffic, New York traffic time.
Jesus, y'all are everywhere.
So,
that's awesome.
So that's good for us as well. It's a different audience. And then if you want to catch us on the podcast, you know, you can do Sirius On Demand. You can do SoundCloud. You can do iTunes. We're available there. Stitcher. So, yeah, it just kind of depends on whatever suits you best. If you can't wait, then you're probably going to have to do YouTube and Facebook Live to see everything live. And if you can wait, well, there's other avenues for you, too.
If I'm going off memory correct, I believe they can follow you at The Goes. But more importantly, follow at MMA Junkie Radio. That is definitely the more home base handle. And follow their work and watch along at the aforementioned locations. Because this is usually the spot where I'd say, hey, you know, follow the podcast. We're on iTunes. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Positive ratings and recommendations are definitely very helpful with the algorithm. And, you know, I'm only 13 episodes deep. I think this is our 13th episode. But you know, I'll get in the spot where I can ask. But to be honest, man, save all that. MMA Junkie Radio has been around. Forget the tag radio iteration. Just MMA Junkie Radio.
Yeah.
They've been around for a minute, man. And not only just from being around for a minute and because, you know, just because something's old doesn't make it great. I get that. Okay, this or that. I mean, that doesn't mean everything, although it's definitely worth your respect. But the reason why you should follow along is even like a hardcore like myself, okay, who has to be in tune and I'm analyzing these fights. And Fight Pass is a great tool in all these things. But part of my thing, whether it's as a fan or even when I'm actually getting to the work part as an analyst, shows like yours, MMA Junkie Radio, where you actually can not just get all these fighters, and by the way, one of the few and only daily MMA shows, but you guys actually have a rapport because you've been doing it so long. So the interviews you guys are going to hear on other shows, I can guarantee you, whether you like these fighters or not, they are going to be different interviews than you hear on MMA Junkie Radio. And now, for someone like myself that needs to grasp more than what I see on paper, because sometimes there's not a big sample size to pull from, you know, even from these well-known fighters when I need to look for certain things, certain aspects, to fighters that maybe we don't know that well, MMA Junkie Radio kind of gets you all of those. So definitely watch and follow along if you're trying to keep your ear to the pulse of the sport, whether you're a gamer and that, you know, a gaming and a degenerate gambler, that's why you're following this podcast, or if you're an MMA hardcore, it's going to make you happy either way. So make sure you're subscribing to all of us. This is a friendly, loving network here. Just because I work for Flow and Goes works for Junkie, that doesn't matter, because guess what? We're friends first, and in regards to this sport, we're fans for it first. So I know Goes likes it. I'm not speaking for him too much here, but I know he likes to live by that as well, and I live off these guys, live by these guys' examples, I should say, because I believe it's correct, man.
We were just talking about this yesterday, and I was talking to, I don't want to name drop.
Right.
But I was talking to somebody about it, and the number one goal that I think George and I have always set, and you can attest to this because you're a Flow Combat guy, but we still have you on our show.
Yeah.
You always want to do what's best for the sport. You know, and there's certain interviews that you can have and you can ask certain questions that will maybe get you more followers on Twitter or whatever, but you're going to bury a fighter in the process. And if you're not looking out for the fighters, you're not looking out for the sport. The sport's not going to grow, because as big as it is now, it's nowhere near some of the bigger sports, right? The NFL, soccer, NBA, MLB, all that. If you want them to get to that level, you have to play with them and help them grow as people. And that's the one thing, is I'm not going to tell you don't go to Sherdog, don't go to I didn't retweet what Derek Lewis said.
Right.
Those
are good,
some of my closest friends in media.
Yeah.
I respect what they do, and so if there's anything we can ever do to help somebody out, and we say it all the time on the show, you know, there's quality shows out there. and we don't care where you go to get your news. We just kind of hope you start with us. But, yeah, definitely, man. People work hard in this sport. Ariel Helwani works hard. He's got a great show.
Yeah.
You know, the Sure Dog guys, they got a great show. Luke Thomas, if you look at our lineup on Sirius 93, we got Brian Stan.
Strong.
We have Michael Bisping. I have no problem with anybody listening to those shows. I don't even have a problem if they tell me they don't listen to our show. I just want the sport to grow.
I love that, man, and that's true. It's about ingratiating yourself properly, and for the bigger picture, the sport itself. And I agree. If it's good, if you're a respectable human being, you're putting out relevant content, I'm going to give you a shout-out whether it gets back to you that I gave you a shout-out or not. That's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I'm a fan of the sport. I'm a fan of good people, and if you're a good person putting out good content that's relevant, there should be no reason that I shouldn't be able to talk about it, regardless exactly. of my affiliation or yours. And I myself am trying to follow that example that thankfully you and your brother thankfully set. And I think it's a positive example. I think it's a very positive example that many of us can look from, whether you're a fan or you're working in this sport. I think it's a really healthy attitude you guys go
thank
about.
You. And if you look right above you, Ryan Hitman Bennett up here at the top of the cage.
Never forget where you
came
from.
That's the guy that instilled it in us, and we just like to carry that tradition as well.
And that's why I love doing, you know, that's why I love diving into this, you know, doing this podcast and kind of expanding into this top five, because it allows us to go back to these things, you know, because it's important. The sport's growing, and as great as guys like Conor McGregor and as great as they're helping the sport grow, we can't have people thinking that this was the first guy to try to do boxing and try to do things when we had guys like BJ Penn or this or that. Mm-hmm. But we have to take this time. We don't have to. But for hardcores like ourselves, I think it's important to take this time to reflect back. Definitely. And those of you joining our journey, whether you're subscribing to my podcast or MMA Junkie Radio or both, thank you for doing that, because you are a part of the history, whether you realize it or not. Even if your name's not a part of that history, you are contributing to keeping an important thing alive that, as much as our sport's growing, it's still not the sturdiest, okay? This sport could drastically change tomorrow. I know you're okay with that. We're both at peace with that. We're both just grateful to be here. But at the same time, I think it's important to respect these things. So thanks for coming on today, man.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. And likewise, what you're saying, just there's so many options for... We live in an era where you have so much going on with your smartphones and shows you're DVRing. For somebody to give 2 hours of their day to listen to our show, we can never repay something like that. So, yeah, it's good that you remember that and that you say these things to your listeners, because it means a lot for them to give you time.
And what is almost the longest show for good reason, by the way, for more than good reason, because we have my man, forget what he's done in the sport that I keep harking on. He's my good friend over here, okay?
Yeah.
Forget all that. My good friend goes more than deserving.
Yeah, he comes to my house all the time.
Absolutely, man. From Mayweather Pacquiao boxing to MMA events back in the day. I mean, I remember going to UFC 125. Thankfully, you guys gave me a ticket, and I remember going to that show with a guy who nobody knew at the time, a pre-Bellator gentleman, who said, "Hey, Dan, wait up. I don't know anybody. Hold on. I don't want to be an asshole. It goes alone." And that was Michael Chandler, so I let him tag along with me. Mm-hmm. And he ended up being your guys' roommate. So it's this weird thing we do of favors for each other, where we end up introducing each other to key, integral members of our sport and life. It's fantastic. It's beautiful. And thank you for listening to Goza's 2-hour show, and thank you for listening to this, what has been almost the longest Protect Your Neck podcast, almost a 2-hour show. I can't thank you enough.
Really? Was it?
Yeah, we're a minute 40 seconds here. Time flies when we're revisiting the past. We're definitely going to get Goza. We're definitely getting George back on soon, even for a breakdown show, because I know Gigi loves himself some gaming, and I want to pick his brain on that, by the way. So we'll have more junkie representation. Otherwise, I appreciate you guys for tuning in to Protect Your Neck podcast. Follow me on Twitter at the MMAnalyst. Follow Goes at the Goes. And until next time, protect your neck.